This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. With another 60 minutes of old-time radio, this is the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me again today. We're going to start off this episode with something from The Whistler, an episode from October 4th, 1942, titled The Urge to Kill. Then it's a quick, incredible, but true, and You Tell Me Your Dream. We'll finish off with Orson Welles in The Black Museum and The Spotted Bedsheet, an episode first aired in 1952. First, here's The Whistler.
Wait a minute. Have you heard the strange tales of The Whistler?
Terrible feeling of depression, and then this awful urge comes upon me. The urge to hurt someone. The urge to inflict pain. The urge to kill.
Another Sunday night, and again CBS presents The Whistler.
I, The Whistler, know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales. Many secrets hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak. And so I tell you tonight the unusual tale, The Urge to Kill. Henry Drake sits in his big office, staring out over the smoking stacks of his busy factory. Production is at its peak. The demands of the past year have brought untold problems to his desk and placed heavy loads on his shoulders. Henry Drake and his partner, Philip Putnam, had started this factory 5 years ago and built it into a smooth-running, highly profitable organization. But now the added demands of war have more than trebled the production and the worries as well. Phil had put up most of the money and Henry the brain. It was Henry who always had to make the decision. But now something is happening to Henry. He is beginning to slip. His memory is playing tricks on him.
Mr. Drake.
Oh. Good morning, Ethel.
Mr. Putnam wants to know if you studied those contracts last night.
Contracts? What contracts?
Why, the ones he gave you last night. You said you'd take them home. They must be signed by noon.
Contracts? Why, I don't know what you're talking about. When did Phil give me any contracts?
Why, just before you left last evening.
Well, that's funny.
Don't you remember?
What? Remember? Well, yes, I do remember now. Yes, of course.
Well, may I have them?
Well, now, let me see. What on earth did I do with them? Tell Mr. Putnam to step in here.
Yes, Mr. Drake. Mr. Drake would like to see you, Mr. Putnam.
I'll be right in.
I'll ring if I need you, Ethel.
All right.
Good morning, Henry. What's up?
Why, about those contracts you gave me yesterday evening. Just what were they about?
What? What do you mean? Haven't you read them?
No. No, I haven't.
Good heavens, man. They were supposed to be signed by noon today, and it's 10 o'clock now. Now, where are they?
I don't know where they are, Phil. I can't find them. I'm sure I didn't take them home.
Oh, you must have.
Strange. I can't remember a thing about them.
Well, what did you do after you left here? Where'd you go?
Why, I went home. That is, I think I did.
Think you did? What's the matter with you, Henry?
I don't know, Phil. I can't seem to recall a thing I did last evening.
Are you kidding?
Certainly not. Why should I kid about such a thing?
Well, don't get sore about it. Certainly ridiculous. This is a serious situation.
I know, Phil. I know that better than you do.
Well, call your home. They've got to be there. Have Rita send them over by special messenger.
Yes, sir?
Get Mrs. Drake on the phone. You know, it looked very well, Henry. You're as pale as a ghost. Look at the perspiration. What's wrong with you, man?
I don't know. I really don't know. I feel terrible, and my eyes are bothering me. Bright flashes keep passing in front of me, and my ears throb.
Oh, hello? Oh, Rita, this is Phil. Henry brought a contract home to study last evening. Look around and see if you can find it, hmm? Yeah, it's very important. In a blue binder, about 20 pages. What? I see. Thanks. She's in the library now.
Oh.
Yes? You can't. Yes. I see. Really? Well, all right. Now, call me back.
Well, what about it?
You have no idea what happened to you after you left here last evening at 6?
Did I leave at 6?
Certainly. So did I. She said you didn't come home for dinner. She decided to go to the opera. And when she came back at 12, you didn't come in until 1. Said your shoes and trousers were all covered with mud. You went straight to bed.
Was it raining last night?
Of course it was.
I don't remember that.
Rita's going to look in the coat and suit you were wearing last night. She'll call me back.
What on earth is happening to me? Where could I have gone?
Yes? Yes, Rita. Well, you couldn't. I see. Very well, thanks. Goodbye. Not a trace of the contract. Now what?
Phil, I've got to tell you this. This isn't the first time this has happened. It's been going on for weeks. About twice every week, a terrible depression comes over me, and then when I wake up, I can't for the life of me remember what happened the night before.
Well, maybe the strain has been too much. You better see a doctor at once, Henry.
Oh, I know I should, but I'm afraid to.
Why?
I'm afraid of what he might tell me.
Oh, nonsense. Go and see a doctor right now. I'll go down to your place and search it from top to bottom.
Very well, Phil. I'll go now. I'll be back as soon as I can.
Henry stumbles in a daze from his office and walks about the city for an hour trying to make up his mind to see a doctor. He doesn't have the courage to tell his own doctor, so he finally decides to visit a psychiatrist. Then he remembers the name of one of the most famous in the country, Dr. Schultz, the state psychiatrist.
I know you're not a general practitioner, Dr. Schultz. As a state psychiatrist, I know you're a busy man, but I've read a few of your books and I thought you'd be willing to help me.
Well, ordinarily I wouldn't, Mr. Drake, but I know who you are and what you've been doing. I'll do what I can.
Thank you, Doctor.
You say you have lapses of memory?
Yes. I wake up in the morning and can't remember what happened the night before. In the morning I have headaches and see strange flashes before my eyes and hear throbbing noises.
How often does this occur?
About twice a week, but I remember everything I do during the day.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever had a serious ailment?
No.
Ever had an accident? Anything that might have caused a concussion?
Well, not that I remember. I may have had as a child.
Hmm. Have you been working under an exceptional mental strain?
Yes. Yes, I have. The pressure has been more than doubled. For the last year, the problems have been so heavy that I've been unable to sleep. I've studied them until dawn, until finally I was unable to remember them.
Hmm. You don't go to sleep easily.
No, not till very late. From all appearances, I wander about until 1 o'clock in the morning. Where, I don't know.
Hmm. You're married?
Yes.
Well, what does your wife think of your strange behavior?
Well, naturally, she doesn't like it. She says I walk in and go to bed without saying a word. So now she doesn't even ask where I've been.
Are you and your wife incompatible?
Well, somewhat.
Have you ever been interested in another woman?
I have not.
Any children?
No.
Hmm. Have you ever been caught in a predicament where you were forced to do something dishonest in order to escape a severe penalty?
Well, what do you mean?
Well, I'll put it another way. Do you fear anything or anybody?
No.
Do you hate anything or anybody?
Yes. Lately, I dislike my work, my business, intensely.
Why?
I don't know why. Maybe I've had too much of it.
Hmm. Who is closest to you in your work?
Well, I have a partner, and we have a secretary.
And who are they?
My partner is Philip Putnam. My secretary is Ethel Watson.
Oh, you both have the same secretary?
Yes. That way we keep things more orderly.
Mm-hmm. Could you get along without her?
Oh, I never thought of it. She's very capable, but I suppose I could get along without her.
Hmm. Does your partner have as much responsibility in the business as you?
I do most of the mental work.
Do you resent that?
You mean, do I think he should take more responsibility? Yes, I do. But he isn't capable. He plays golf and takes days off at a time. Yes, I do resent that. I know nothing can be done about it.
Is your partner married?
No. For a while, I thought he and our secretary were growing fond of each other, but in the last few months, it seems to have cooled.
Hmm. Are your financial affairs in order?
Exceptionally so. Never better.
Are you worried about the outcome of the war?
Well, no, no more than anyone else. I realize it'll keep every nose to the grindstone.
Did you drink?
Well, I'm temperate. Probably a little more of late.
Never took narcotics.
No, no. I've tried sleeping tablets, but they did me no good.
I see. Have you anything further to add to this discussion?
I know.
But then I must ask you to leave and not come back.
What? Why, what do you mean, Doctor?
Just that. Leave and don't come back until you decide to tell me the truth.
But I've been telling you everything I know.
No, you haven't. There's something you've been withholding. Good day.
Wait a minute. What are you trying to say?
I'm not trying to say anything. I've told you that you're holding something back, some fear that you don't want known. But if you want me to help you, you'll have to divulge everything.
All right. I thought maybe you could help me without my telling, but... All right. I'll tell you what it is.
That's better.
It happens on these mornings when I fail to remember what has occurred the night before. It happens during these spells of flashes and noises.
What happens?
I get this terrible feeling of depression. And then slowly, gradually, the urge comes to me.
The urge to what?
The urge to hurt someone. The urge to inflict pain, inflict injury on someone.
On whom?
Anyone. Any person who comes into my mind. Anyone I see or think about. The waitress in the cafe, my secretary, my chauffeur, my wife, my partner, a laborer. Anyone.
Have you ever killed anyone, Drake?
No, no, I swear never, and I don't want to. And that's why I'm here. I'm afraid. Afraid of myself. I don't want to harm anyone. I'd rather die.
Would you?
Yes. All right. Now you know. That's my great fear. Something's got to be done about it. You've got to help me.
Very well, Drake. I'm glad you finally told me. Now I know what to do. Know where to start.
You don't think I'm going... completely to pieces. Mentally, I mean.
No, I don't think so.
You think it's just temporary?
Let's not talk about it anymore.
But what can I do?
I want you to stay away from the business for a week. Don't go near it. Don't think about it. I want you to stay in bed as much as possible. Read something in the light vein. Putter about if you like. In the garden, say. Anything but business. At the end of the week, I want to see you again. But above all, rest. Rest your mind and your body.
Yes, I understand. And you think you think that will bring me out of these spells?
I think everything will turn out for the best.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Schultz. I appreciate all this, and I'll see you in a week.
Goodbye, Mr. Drake. And Miss Burton.
Yes, Dr. Schultz.
Did you take down that interview, Miss Burton?
Yes, Doctor. I made a recording of it.
Thank you.
Henry goes home and stays in bed for 3 days, according to the doctor's instructions. Then, toward midnight of the third evening, his wife, Rita, comes home and is startled to find him gone.
Jackson? Jackson?
Yes, Mrs. Drake.
Jackson, where's Mr. Drake?
Why, Mr. Drake is in his room.
But he isn't. He's gone.
Gone? But I didn't see him go out, ma'am.
When did you see him last?
Why, it was about 9:30. I looked in to see if there was anything he wanted before I retired.
What did he say? Was he dressed?
No, ma'am. He was in bed. He said he didn't want anything and that I might as well turn in.
Where on earth could he have gone on a rainy night like this?
Well, shall I go out and try to find him, ma'am?
No. No, never mind, Jackson. You can go back to bed.
Yes, yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Can't imagine why on earth he'd go out when he wasn't feeling well. Hello? Phil? This is Rita. I just came in and Henry isn't here. I don't know. The butler said he saw him at 9:30 and he was in bed. Why would he go out in a storm? What reason could he possibly have? No, I don't think so. I hope he doesn't. Yes. Good night, Phil. Yes, I'll see you tomorrow evening, if possible. Good night.
As Rita hangs up the receiver, she suddenly realizes the library door is closed, but a streak of light shows beneath it. She steps quickly to the door and opens it softly.
Henry.
Huh?
What are you doing here?
Oh. Hello, Rita.
Why aren't you in bed?
In bed? Why, I don't know.
Who are you phoning?
Phoning? Oh, I was just thinking about phoning the doctor. I wanted to talk to him.
At this hour of the night? It's 12 o'clock.
12? Yeah, so it is.
Wait till morning.
Yes, yes. Anyway, I can't remember what I wanted to say to him.
Where have you been?
Where have I been? I haven't been anyplace.
But you must have. Look at your top coat. It's soaking wet. And look at your shoes. They're muddy.
That's strange. I don't remember having gone out I thought I'd been sitting right here all evening.
But it's obvious that you haven't been here all evening. You have been out.
Perhaps so.
This is the second or third time you've come in with your shoes all muddy. Where do you go at this time of night?
I tell you, I don't remember.
I don't believe
you. Whether you do or not, I don't remember where I've been.
It's the silliest thing I ever heard of. A man like you, an intelligent man, walking around in his sleep.
But I couldn't have been asleep. I know that much.
Nonsense.
Oh, don't be so impatient, Rita. I don't like this any more than you do, but I'm sure I'll be all right in a short time. Dr. Schultz will pull me out of it.
Well, I hope so.
Have you been out, Rita?
Why, of course. I told you early in the evening I was going to play bridge with the Parkers.
Oh, perhaps you did, but I don't remember that either.
I told you just the same.
Oh, I'm sorry, Rita. I know this must be very trying for you. It isn't very pleasant to have a man mope about the house all the time.
Better go to bed, Henry, and get off those wet clothes.
Oh, yes. Rita, why don't you go away for a few days? Take a little rest. I know you're terribly upset about all this, and but it would do you good.
It wouldn't be exactly right for me to go away at a time like this. What would people think of me?
Oh, who cares what people think? You could go up to the mountains or down to Miami or, well, any place. Maybe by the time you come back, I'll be all right.
Do you want me to go?
Oh, I don't want you to go, but I think it would be good for you. You're becoming upset because of me, and I think you'd worry less if you got away for a few days.
Very well. Perhaps you're right. We'll talk about it in the morning.
All right. Good night, Rita.
Good night.
Henry sits for a while staring at the telephone, then gets up slowly and shuffles up the steps to his room. He pauses for a few moments before Rita's door, then goes on to his own room and goes to bed. The storm continues in its fury, and from his kennel in the backyard, Duke, Rita's Airedale, begins to howl. Finally, the storm subsides. Morning comes, and Henry joins Rita at breakfast.
What's the matter, Henry? You haven't eaten a bite.
No. I'm not hungry. I don't feel at all well this morning.
You do look pale. I've never seen you so haggard.
No?
What's the matter with your hands?
My hands?
Well, yes. You keep staring at them and flexing your fingers.
Oh. Well, I don't know. You seem to... Well, it feels like rheumatism.
Have some coffee.
Yes, I believe I will.
Here you are. Oh, good heavens. All over the floor.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just seem to have no grip. Getting bad. I can't even hold on to a cup. Rita. Rita, what have you decided about that trip? I wish you'd take a few days vacation.
Oh, it sounds as though you want to get rid of me.
I'm only thinking of you.
Very well, if you insist. I'll go up to the mountain place. Maybe it'll do us both some good.
Oh, Mrs. Gates! Mrs. Gates!
Jackson, what on earth are you so excited about?
Something terrible has happened.
Terrible? What do you mean?
I don't know how to tell you. It's awful.
What are you trying to say?
It's Duke, your Airedale.
What's happened to him?
He's dead. I just went out to the kennel to unhook his chain, and there he was, ma'am.
Oh, good heavens. Well, what happened to him?
He's been strangled. There he was beside his house, and his tongue was sticking way out. Oh, it's awful, ma'am.
Strangled? But why? Oh,
well, maybe he got tangled up in his chain, but it didn't appear so, ma'am. Somebody did it deliberately.
Oh, the poor fellow. I can't imagine such a thing.
Wait a minute, Rita. I wouldn't go out there.
Oh, but I must.
Please don't. It'll just upset you. Please don't go.
Very well. But, I'm just sick all over.
Oh, now, Rita, I know how you feel, and it's a shame. Jackson, tell the maid to pack Mrs. Drake's things. She's going to the mountains for a few days.
Henry Drake sits staring at his hands for a few moments, opening and closing them, opening and closing them. Then suddenly he leaves the house and rushes to Dr. Schultz's office.
What is wrong with you, Drake? You were to come here today after tomorrow.
I had to see a doctor. Something terrible has happened.
Now. Just calm down, calm down. Take it easy. Sit down, Drake.
It happened in the night.
What happened?
You, my wife's dog, he was killed last night.
Killed? Well, how did that happen?
He was strangled, choked to death.
Well, who did it?
I must have done it.
You? Oh, come now. What makes you think that?
I can't remember a thing about it. I can remember nothing of last night, but I must have done it because of my hands.
What's wrong with your hands?
They hurt. The muscles are terribly sore, as though I'd been doing something strenuous.
I see.
And look at this mark on my thumb. It's a long cut, as though something sharp dragged across it.
You mean like a tooth?
Yes. Why not? The dog's tooth.
Hmm. Certainly does. You really think you killed the dog?
What do you think, Doctor?
Well, I suppose it's possible. But there's no proof. Could be coincidental.
I don't think so. I must have done it. He never disturbed the neighbors that I know of.
Did you like the dog?
Why, of course. I was very fond of him. Don't you see what this means? I've been afraid of something like this. Heaven knows what else I've done when I've been in these lapses. You've got to do something for me.
Drake, I'm going to have to put you through all the tests. It'll take some time, but I think we can get at the root of your trouble.
Do anything. Anything you say.
We'll start right now. Miss Burton, get Dr. Fenton. I want him to assist me in a complete examination.
Yes, Dr. Schultz.
Now, Drake, just relax and continue staring into this little beam of light. We want you to answer these questions as quickly as possible.
Yes.
You're crossing a street. An automobile suddenly bears down upon you, you see?
Yes.
In an effort to save yourself, you jump out of the way.
Yes.
You jump forward or backward?
Why, backward?
Why?
I can jump backward quicker than I can forward.
Repeat after me as rapidly as possible. 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 8, 9.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
You have no children?
No.
But you are married?
Yes.
Suppose you had a child. You come home at night and discover your house is on fire. Your wife and child are alone, asleep on the second floor. Would you try to rescue them first or call the fire department?
Call the fire department?
I see. Get all that for the timing, Miss Burton?
Yes, Doctor.
Now, Drake, keep your eyes on the black dot. Follow it closely as it moves. I'm going to call out a series of words. As I call them, you will answer the word or phrase suggested by what I say.
Yes.
Green.
Grass.
Roses.
Funeral.
Orange.
Sunset.
Honeysuckle.
Home.
Violet.
White.
Red.
Blood.
Dog.
Hand.
Auto.
Wreck.
Rain.
Mud.
Love.
Hate.
Very well, Drake. Here, rest for 10 minutes and we'll proceed to the next test. How do your hands feel?
Huh? Oh, why, about the same.
All right. Here, come with me, Miss Burton.
So on through the day, at various intervals, the psychiatrist continues his examination. And finally, Drake goes home completely exhausted. For an hour or two, he dozes in the library. And about 9:30, Jackson, the butler, steps into the room.
Beg pardon, sir.
Huh? Oh, where have you been, Jackson?
Why, no one was here, sir. I went over to visit my brother for a few hours.
Where's Mrs. Drake?
Why, she's going to Miami for a few days, sir. Said to tell you she thought she'd better go today. Took the 6 o'clock train this evening.
Oh, I see.
Anything you want, sir?
No, you can turn in if you like.
Yes, thank you, sir. Good night.
All right.
Henry sits staring into the dark for almost an hour. Then slowly he rises, as if in a daze, puts on his hat and coat, slips out of the house, and starts to walk about in the night. Finally, he comes to an apartment house, climbs to the top floor, and knocks on the door.
Henry! What are you doing here?
I want to talk to you, Phil.
Well, come in. What's the matter with you? Sit down.
I don't want to sit down.
Well, just as you like. What do you want to talk about?
You have your bags packed. Are you going someplace?
Why, yes. I'm driving down to Boston for a week on business.
On business?
Yes, on business. I tried to reach you today, but was unable to. What on earth's wrong with you? What are you staring at?
You sure you're going to Boston?
Certainly I'm sure. What are you laughing about?
You aren't going to Boston. I know where you're going.
I tell you, I'm going to Boston.
I don't believe you.
What are you talking about?
Rita's gone to Miami. Why don't you go to Miami, too? Wouldn't you like that better? I think that'd be very jolly.
Oh, for heaven's sake, stop this nonsense.
Is Rita here?
Certainly not. Why should she be here?
I wonder. Couldn't you think of any reason?
I think you're out of your mind.
Do you? Really?
You certainly act like it.
Oh, but I'm not. I'm perfectly sane.
Oh, crazy people think they're sane.
Maybe I am crazy, but I don't feel crazy. I'm perfectly normal.
You better go home. You're in no condition to be wandering around.
Where's Rita?
I don't know where Rita is.
She hasn't been here?
No.
You're lying, Phil. She has been here.
That's ridiculous.
Look, here in the ashtray, one of Rita's special-made cigarettes.
Why, I put that there. I thought I'd try them.
Really? When did you take to using lipstick, Phil?
All right. She was here, but she left to catch a train at 6 o'clock.
And you'll catch the next one, is that it?
She came here to talk about you. She's terribly upset about your condition. She thinks... Well?
Well? What does she think?
She's become afraid of you.
Oh, has she? And what caused that?
Well, she... Why wouldn't she be upset? You've been acting like a lunatic. She thinks you killed a dog. Did you?
I don't remember. Maybe I did.
I've got to hurry. My train leaves in half an hour.
There's no train for Boston for 3 hours, but the train to Miami leaves in half an hour.
You'd better go home, Henry.
Why don't you admit it? Why lie about it? You're meeting her in Miami.
Get out of here.
You and Rita are in love. I know it. I've known it for weeks and weeks. Last night I found out for sure.
You're crazy.
Maybe I am. But I heard you both talking on the phone. She didn't know I was listening in on the extension in the library. I heard you agree to meet at a certain time. That's what I've been waiting for. Now I know.
All right, all right. What of it? Well, you've been acting as enough to make any woman dislike you.
Oh, so you admit it.
Yes. Now get out of here. Henry, put away that gun.
All right. I'm going to leave it right here when I'm through with it. I'm going to kill you.
You insane fool. You can't get away with a thing like this. You can't prove anything about Rita and me. They'll hang you.
I don't think so. Don't you remember? I'm crazy.
I'll fix you. Police department.
Go ahead. Call them. That's fine.
Hello? This is Phil Putnam, Rexley Apartment. There's a madman in my room. He's trying to kill me. Crazy.
What a shame, Phil. You've missed the train.
Well, it's all over, Henry. Sit down now and wait for the police. You won't have any more mental lapses now, will you, Henry? You won't need to. Good job, Henry. And very beautifully planned. Everyone knows about your mental lapses, your illness, your desire to harm people. Rita knows about the dog. Your secretary knows about the contract. And most important of all, Dr. Schultz knows that you've been suffering from a mental disorder for weeks. Oh, there'll be a trial. Your plea will be insanity. You'll go away for a while. And then all of a sudden you'll be cured and walk out a free man. Now we're in the courtroom. Dr. Schultz, the psychiatrist, is speaking.
Mr. Drake came to me with his trouble some weeks ago. Later, Dr. Fenton and I psychoanalyzed him thoroughly. Here is a signed statement of our findings at that time, attached to our findings as of yesterday. Henry Drake was then, and is now, absolutely sane. The whole thing was a plan to escape the death penalty for premeditated murder.
Well, there you go, Henry. The whole thing blew up in your face. A beautiful plan gone haywire. You should have spent less time thinking about your revenge, Henry, and more time studying psychology. Too bad.
CBS has presented The Whistler. Original music for this production is composed and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. The Whistler is written and directed by J. Donald Wilson and originates from Columbia Square in Hollywood. Next Sunday, 9:15...
I, The Whistler, will return to tell you the strange story of death in the morning. Good night.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
So close are the ties of blood, we are rarely surprised when we hear of a man or a woman who has been saved from death by the courage and self-sacrifice of another member of the family. But when a double rescue takes place, and when the parties to it are thousands of miles apart, and neither one even aware of his role in it, then it is an incident which belongs in the chronicles of the strange and the incredible.
It was in the winter of 1940. The British submarine C-23 was at rest far beneath the surface of the water. And in his bunk, Officer Ian Scott lay fast asleep, dreaming. Somehow, he found himself in a munitions plant in London. In the room before him, a young girl was hard at work.
Why, it's Nell. It's my sister, Nell.
Scott came quickly up behind her, but then suddenly he stopped. The girl was no longer working. She was asleep, her head on the table. Near her, a thin tongue of flame was creeping closer and closer.
Good Lord, fire! Nell, wake up! The plant's on fire!
In desperation, Scott seized her arm and shook it violently, and she raised her head. But just at that moment... Officer Scott awoke, the sound of the explosion still crashing in his ears. And now, as his mind cleared, he became aware of the air around him.
Petrol fumes. The whole submarine's filled with them. We've got to get to the surface or we're lost.
Around him, other members of the crew were lying in their bunks sleeping. As a result of the fumes, some had already slipped into a deep coma. But by shouting and shaking and slapping, Officer Scott managed to arouse three of them, and working with maniacal speed, they brought the vessel to the surface, to the fresh, sweet, life-giving air.
You know, you chaps ought to be grateful to my sister Nell. If I hadn't dreamed about her, and if that explosion in my dream hadn't awakened me when it did, the whole lot of us would have been dead pigeons. You really ought to thank her.
It was another 2 months before Officer Scott did get home on leave. And among those who greeted him with greatest warmth was his sister Nell. For, as she said, not only was she glad to see him, but she had a very special reason to be grateful to him.
Grateful? What did I do?
Just saved my life, that's all. It was about 2 months ago. I was working at the plant. I got so sleepy I couldn't hold my head up. I left my table... I went to the restroom and fell asleep. And I dreamed about you. You were lying in a submarine, and you looked as if you were dead. But you weren't really dead at all.
I was in a coma, perhaps?
Perhaps. Anyway, I tried to wake you, and I couldn't. And then there was a terrific explosion.
In your dream?
No, it was in the plant. I woke up, and I found out that the whole filling shop, where I work, you know, that it had been blown sky high. 36 women were killed. I'd have been one of them if I'd been working.
After that, Ian Scott told his sister of his own dream, of the role she had played in saving his life. And then the two of them stared at each other in blank amazement. For what theory can be offered to explain this remarkable coincidence? The mere fact that it occurred leads us to realize how scanty is the scientific knowledge which would make comprehensible stories such as this. Stories... incredible, but true.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. The Black Museum. Here, in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide. A warehouse where everyday objects, a tallow candle, for example, a mounted cat, an andiron, all are touched by murder. A bedsheet, it's a familiar object. You see them every night, except on rare occasions when you're roughing it. Linen is the usual material, sometimes they're made of silk. This one is linen. It bears the imprint of the steamship Bengal Tower.
May I make up your bed, Miss Parsons?
Oh, certainly, stewardess. We're on our way, aren't we?
Yes, miss. That's the last we'll see of Cape Town. I'll just change your sheets, miss.
Thank you.
Fresh ones for the first night out.
Today, that bedsheet can be seen in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum.
Hello,
here we are, the Black Museum. Scotland Yard's very special, very particular museum of murder. If you're a student of criminology, a student with some imagination, I don't think you'll be alone here in the Black Museum. Each small card meant solely to identify crime and criminal will bring to life for you a sinister ghost. You'll walk here, attended simultaneously by killer and killed. Here's a long-necked chemist's flask. It was meant to hold life-giving medicine, but somebody intervened. There was acid in this flask. A few pellets dropped in, dissolved. The flask was smoky with lethal vapor. Sleeping man died. Here's a bicycle, made for fun, but notice the wheels, the crumpled spokes, crushed tires. A girl rode this bike downhill, and a wire was stretched across the roadway. Ah, here we are, the sheet. A common, everyday bed sheet, stamped in one corner, SS Bengal Tower. That's a luxury liner on the route between Cape Town and Southampton. It's a nice ship, and a voyage to enjoy, particularly when you're young and homeward bound. Natalie Parsons was young and homeward bound, and very lovely. The first night out, there were two gentlemen friends to dance attendance.
Thank you, Miss Parsons. Now you make even a lieutenant's life a pleasure.
Why, lieutenant, I thought the Navy was the life for a young man with adventure in his soul.
Well, that's just the legend, but all legends come to an end. Just like the dancing tonight.
Mr. Morrow, holding the fort at our table all alone. Let's be nice to him, lieutenant. Hmm? I hear he knows the captain of our ship.
The dancing was over in the main salon. The orchestra retired for the night. High above the brilliantly illuminated decks on the dim, binnacle-lighted bridge, Captain Booth had his own thoughts as he paced away his watch.
Ought to be all right. Full passenger list. Decent crew. Engines in good shape. Ship all squared away, topside and below. You never know. That's the worry and the fascination of it. You never know.
No, Captain. You never know, do you? You never know. Ah, but such thoughts are ridiculous. Look at the three people at that table near the bar in the first-class lounge this minute. The Parsons girl. Actress, the passenger list says. The naval lieutenant. What was his name? Jeff Hennessy, that's it. And Noel Morrow. Past middle-aged, but quite distinguished. Heavy stockholder in the line which owns your Bengal Tower. Nice people having a fine time.
And this, gentleman, concludes our performance for this evening.
Oh, but it's early yet, Miss Parsons.
Well, I'm not used to the sea air, Lieutenant. I'm tired, so I'm going to bed. And thank you both for a lovely first night at sea.
May I see you to your cabin?
Hold on, I claim that privilege. You dance with her all evening, son. Now it's my turn.
Oh, don't fight, gentlemen. Well, not the first night out, anyway. I think we'll accede to Noel's wish tonight, Jeff.
Good.
He has some basis to his claim, you know.
There you are, young fellow.
Well, I surrender. There's plenty of time to Southampton, and lots of moonlight.
Yes, plenty of time for fun and enjoyment, and even playing at love. As the great ship knifes through the tropic seas northward, homeward bound. So Noel Morrow walks Natalie Parsons to her cabin, and returns to the bar for a nightcap with Lieutenant Jeff Hennessy.
To Natalie, a nice girl.
I'll drink to that. A fine talent, I hear.
Yes, I saw in a play in Johannesburg, Three-Cornered Moon. Huh? Very amusing.
That's so. Well, I never heard of it. Still, I'm glad I heard of Natalie Parsons. Nice girl.
Good-looking, too.
Yes, all of that and more. Well, here's to a pleasant voyage.
Two gentlemen converse over whiskey and soda, then repair to their respective quarters. Fall asleep. 2 a.m. Four bells. On the bridge, the watch is changing.
First officer reporting we're leaving, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Forsyth. We're making 15 knots, course 348. All quite below.
Thank you, sir. I took the liberty of checking before I came topside. The watchmen are ringing their station, sir. Stewards and stewardesses turn in, sir.
Very well, mister. Take over. Carry on.
North-northeast, roughly, is the course. The ship moves on. The captain goes to his cabin. First Officer Forsyth and the quartermaster stand to on the bridge. All quiet. Below on B deck, the watchman makes his rounds.
That's a funny one. B-24 ringing for steward and stewardess both. We'll have a look.
What is it, man?
Is something wrong, sir?
Nothing's wrong, why?
Both your buzzers are ringing, sir. For your steward and stewardess both.
There must be a mistake. Everything here is fine.
The watchman is puzzled. He goes back. The buzzers have stopped. He checks the cabin list. B-24. Miss Natalie Parsons. He hesitates back to the cabin or up to the bridge. Was it a mistake? He chose the bridge.
What is it, Peter?
B-24 is a ladies' cabin. A single occupied, Mr. Forsyth.
Is it now?
Buzzers was ringing. I answered. A man came to the door. All I did see of him was his trouser leg and shoe. Black, both of them.
Well, strange things can happen on shipboard on a cruise like this, you know. You just go on with your rounds and fill out your report when you go off watch.
Yes, sir. Very well, sir.
In a few moments, I'll go below and check. Want to make sure, meet me at B-24 at 5 bells.
Aye, aye, sir. Thank you, sir.
Strange things do happen on shipboard. Even without tropic seas and a voyage home, quite strange things. 5 bells. 2:30. First Officer Forsyth, with Watchman Petrie at his elbow, knocked discreetly on the door to B-24.
Unlocked, is it? Careless.
So it seems, sir.
Swing your torch in here, Petrie.
Aye, sir.
Nobody here. Cabin's empty. All right, Petrie. Make your report. I'll enter this on the log. We'll let it go at that. Girls will be girls, Petrie. Trust you haven't forgotten, eh?
Discreet fellow, that first officer, but then he'd had plenty of cruise experience. He noted the matter in the log. After all, he had left the bridge for a few moments. And that was all. Now, it happens that one of the duties of the first officer is to call the roll at boat drill. You know how that goes. The bells clang all over the ship. The passengers joke as they reach for life bells, dusty with disuse, and scramble to the boat deck at the stations noted on their cabin doors. And after a bit, the first officer comes around and checks the roll.
Yes, I know. I quite agree. Yeah. Answer to your names, please, ladies and gentlemen. This is a boat station for cabins B-18 to B-45. All passengers and crew assigned here will answer. Mr. Ainsworth?
Here.
Alan Birch?
Here, sir.
Miss Lawrence?
Here.
Mr. Leary?
Present.
Nancy Meadows?
Yes, sir.
Major Norton?
Here.
Miss Parsons? Miss Parsons? Miss Parsons!
The first officer reported to Captain Booth. Captain Booth thought it might be courteous if Miss Parsons were under the weather to pay her a courtesy call. Captain knocked.
Empty.
Strange. Stewardess? Stewardess!
Yes, sir? You wanted me, Captain?
I do. You see Miss Parsons this morning?
No, sir, I haven't. It's a little queer, rather.
How so?
Well, she wasn't at boat drill either, sir. Her night things are missing.
You laid them out last night, did you?
Yes, sir. Pretty things, too. Just right for her. But not a sign of them this morning, and stains all over the sheet.
How's that? Where?
Here, sir. Sort of red and a few black ones, sir. Streaks like.
I see. Just a moment. There are times when I'm glad first-class cabins have telephones. This is the captain speaking. I want Dr. Stout in B-24 at once. Thank you.
You don't think something's happened, do you, sir? She's such a nice girl.
That's what everyone says. Funny goings on in here last night. Watchman's report. A log. Notice anything else peculiar here this morning, stewardess?
Well, yes, sir. When the first I came in to straighten up, first off, I noticed the porthole, sir. Swinging open it was all by itself. I fastened it before anything, sir.
Yes, that's right.
You call for me, Captain?
Yes, Doctor. Take a look at the stains on that sheet, will you?
Right.
All right, stewardess, you can go, but stay on call.
Yes, sir, I'll be right outside.
And send in the watchman.
Yes, sir.
Well, Doctor?
These are probably lipstick. The other red spots, they look like blood, I'm afraid. I'll tell better after I've run a test. The black marks beat me.
Not a very pleasant prospect. Blood on the sheet and an open porthole.
Watchman Petrie, Captain.
Ah, yes, don't go, Doctor. Now, see here, Petrie. This man you reported speaking to last night, did you see his face?
Sorry, sir, I didn't. Only his trouser and one shoe, like I told Mr. Forsyth.
I see. It's too bad. What about his voice?
It was muffled, sir, by the door. But he did have, a kind of accent, sir.
What kind? American? Welsh? Scots? Irish?
If anything, it was Scotch, sir.
All right. Dismissed.
Thank you, sir.
Well, Doctor, I don't like the looks of it. I'd seal this cabin and notify owners if I were you. I'll do that and more. This is the captain. Hey, give me the bridge. Watch, officer, please. Hello, Mr. Matson. Captain Booth here. I want a complete search of the ship at once for a passenger. Natalie Parsons. Crow's nest to block hole. And put the ship about, mister. We're going back on a sea search as well. Calculate our position at 4 bells this morning. I'll be topside directly. We're not going to find her alive, you know, Doctor. But we've got to have a look.
I know.
If this girl went through that porthole alive, the sharks have got her by now. If she went through dead, we have a murderer aboard. As I said before, not a very pleasant prospect, Doctor.
Now it didn't look so pleasant. An empty cabin. An open porthole. And blood on the sheet. And I'd remind you that that sheet today can be seen in the Black Museum.
Do you gentlemen have anything to add? Have you, gentlemen?
Neither of them did. But in Southampton, the Criminal Investigation Department did have a few items to add.
All right, Hobson. What's the report on this Parsons girl?
Well, exactly what she said she was, Inspector. Actress.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently quite well accepted in Joburg. Plenty of men at the stage door, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
Age 25. Never a touch of scandal. 2 points.
Yeah.
She was in the Army Intelligence during the war. Had languages. Good actress. Quite a help.
Well, possibly in Secret Service nowadays.
No, I called the Special Branch on that. Positively no. She's back in civil life completely.
Oh, well, that's a possible theory down the drain.
Yes, sir.
Well, you had 2 points, Sergeant.
Yes, sir. The other is, she said she left Joburg for a theatre job here. Well, there's no sign of it, sir. No manager in England has signed her, though some of them knew the name.
Oh, we'll keep after that. Oh, how about the passenger and crew list? Anyone familiar?
No, not a criminal record in the lot. And we've checked all 368 of them.
All right, Sergeant. Well, keep after that theatre job angle. Meanwhile, alert the technicians and the harbour police. We'll be going aboard that ship before the pilot takes her over.
The ship with a sealed cabin drew nearer to home. Somehow the festive quality of a voyage home was missing. Tension settled over the Bengal Tower, from the bridge to the boiler room. At long, long last, the anchor dropped into Southampton water. The passengers gathered to watch for the pilot boat.
That's no pilot boat, is it, Halsey?
Police launch.
I expected as much.
Funny. You dance with a girl, you know her for 8-10 hours out of your life. She stays with you.
It happened, son. She was a lovely thing. Don't fall in love with a ghost. You wind up rather lonely, you know.
Thanks. I'll remember that. Quite a few of them coming aboard.
Yes, we're in for a going over, apparently.
The captain spoke to the passengers and crew over the public address system.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, representatives of the Southampton police have come aboard to proceed with the necessary inquiry into the tragic disappearance of one of our fellow passengers. Until this inquiry has run its course, it'll be necessary to lie off and not to proceed ashore. Your cooperation will be greatly appreciated. And I'm sure you realize that all which can be done is being done to place you ashore as soon as possible. Thank you.
I wish them luck. How I wish them luck.
On B-deck, Inspector Rice took over from a greatly relieved Captain Booth. No time was wasted.
Set up a lab in the ship's pharmacy. Get at those stains. Compare them with the girl's lipstick and get the blood type. And find out what's in those black markings.
Yes, sir.
I'll strip the bed and go through her things top to bottom. Now, I want to talk to the watchman, the stewardess, And from what you say, Captain, the man in here that night had a Scots accent.
That's correct.
Well, how many Scotsmen aboard? Have you checked that?
We have. 26, Inspector. 18 passengers, 8 in the crew.
Oh, very good, sir. You have been thorough. Now, you, I take it, are the watchmen.
They work quickly, but they work thoroughly. The watchman and the stewardesses reasserted their statements to the captain with one addition.
Oh, yes, sir. I cleaned the cabin thoroughly. Wiped everything.
That was too bad. No chance now for fingerprints. In the improvised laboratory in the ship's pharmacy, they did better.
The lipstick stains match the lipstick in her luggage exactly, sir.
The blood type on that spotted sheet?
Type O, sir. The girl's army record gives the same type.
Meanwhile, information arrived from ashore.
She had a job waiting for her, Inspector, at the Abbey Theatre in Dublin, sir.
And then the police chemist came up with a long-awaited answer.
The black streaks on the sheet, sir. Lamp black wax and petroleum oil. That's shoe polish. But there's a trace of silver polish mixed in, sir.
Ah, now we've got something, Hobson.
Yes, sir, but what?
Well, who'd get silver polish on his boots aboard ship, Sergeant?
Well, it's a weird combination, sir.
A ship steward, Hobson. A steward with a Scots accent. Now let's see the captain, shall we?
I'll cooperate in any way I can, Inspector. But even if it is one of my men, there's not a thing to tie any of them to the incident.
Well, sir, I have an idea. We can let the passengers ashore now, but hold the crew. Then you invite the police detail and the ship's officers to luncheon. Set up 4 tables well apart, waited on by the 4 stewards you say are Scots-born. At the end of the meal... Thank you, Steward. I will have some more coffee. Now, as I was saying, gentlemen, it's practically over. That one fingerprint on the glass of the porthole will hang the man. No question about it. They always forget something, make at least one silly mistake. There'll be a ship's mechanic from our harbor police aboard.
All right, young fella. You can stop polishing that porthole cover now.
What's the meaning of this? I'm doing my job.
There's no fingerprint on the glass. You fell for the inspector's plan. I'll have to take you in charge. Willful murder on suspicion. And I must warn you, anything you say may be taken down in writing.
They smoked him out all right, but he refused to give in without a struggle. It was interesting to watch his mind work as they questioned him.
You're Alan Burt.
I am.
Your first trip aboard the Bengal Tower?
Round trip. Went out in her. This is the return.
Like the ladies, do you?
They seem to like me.
Ever had any trouble with one before?
No, never. What do you mean, before?
Your forearms, Burt, and your neck, all scratched.
No dame ever scratched me.
Well, where did you get them, then?
Ship's cat. I tried to pet her. She let me have it.
It won't wash, Birch. No cat's claws ever scratch like that. Ship's doctor will certify to that. And those scratches aren't old enough to have happened ashore.
All right, then. It was a woman.
Huh?
A stewardess.
Which one?
I'm not saying. She'd lose her job.
Nonsense. Who are you protecting, Birch?
Nobody.
Stop it, Birch. You're only making it harder for yourself. You were on duty for that cabin, among others. She rang. From the watchman's story, the buzzer was stuck. But you didn't realize it until he knocked on the door and spoke to you. You went to B-24, forced your way in, attacked the girl, and when she resisted, you killed her and pushed her through that porthole. Wasn't that the way it was, Birch?
I'll never attack nobody.
We say you did. There's blood on the sheet. Her blood. We'll find it on your clothes, too.
I never attacked her. We had a date. After she ditched the 2 jokers she was dancing and drinking with.
Be careful what you say, Birch. It's all being taken down and may be used in evidence.
I'm telling the truth. I didn't kill her. I was waiting in the cabin like she said. When she came in, she changed her mind or something. She tried to push me out. I don't take that from no woman. I grabbed her. She fell against me. She was foaming at the mouth in a sort of fit. She collapsed. I put her on the bed, tried to give her artificial respiration. That's how the black got on the sheet, maybe.
Probably. Go on, Bert.
When that fool Petrie came to the door, I lost my head. She looked dead. I didn't know what. I locked the door. I couldn't have find no heartbeat. Nothing. I figured Petrie would report to the bridge. I picked her up and pushed her out of the porthole.
Why did you decide to tell this tale, Bert?
Because you'd pin it on me anyway. I know coppers. So better than have yous cook it up, you got it my way. I didn't kill nobody here. I didn't kill nobody.
Stanley Birch had told his story. Not a very good story. For there in contradiction was the testimony and evidence, including that blood-stained bedsheet, which you can see today in the Black Museum. Stuart Birch was a ladies' man. There was no doubt about that after the evidence was in. The jury had little doubt either. They convicted Mr. Birch of first-degree murder, despite his protestations, and despite the fact that for the first time in 200 years, a jury had been given a homicide case without a corpus delicti. This was a major aspect of the case, a very interesting one, I think. And further, just after the conviction, the House of Commons suspended the death penalty in England. As for Stuart Birch, you'll find him spending the rest of his natural life in Dartmoor Prison. And as for the spotted bedsheet, it remains in its customary place. In Scotland Yard, in the Black Museum. And now, until we meet next time, the same place, I tell you another story about the Black Museum. I remain, as always, obediently yours.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. I'll be back next Tuesday with another hour. In the meantime, RelicRadio.com has more old-time radio and links to everything else Relic Radio. You'll also find a donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the Relic Radio shows. I appreciate it if you're able to help. Thanks for joining me this Tuesday. I'll talk to you again next week with a brand new episode of the Relic Radio Show.